Consumer Protection will come to order. It's Tuesday, March 18, 2008. And we are going to begin with Senator Foley. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity to catch you in this committee.
We're not easy to catch, Senator Foley.
I'm bringing forward Senate File 3336, deals with window glazing, yes. And it's fairly limited. I think members should have a brief description of the matter.
Senator Foley, we do. It's drawn to the first engrossment.
Okay. Senate counsel, yeah. But I have Major Tuckner here to do the hard work, and so, Major, are you prepared to go ahead?
I think she's up to it. Welcome. And could you identify yourself for us?
Madam Chair, Michelle Tuckner with the Minnesota State Patrol.
How do you spell your last name?
Last name is spelled T like Tom, U C H, and like Nancy, E R.
Tuckner. Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you for your time today. The bill we have before us here today for the State Patrol deals with window glazing, and the issues for us is officer safety and public safety. The Section 1, Subdivision 30 deals with dealerships selling vehicles. We want them to be in compliance with the window tinting statute so that the vehicles they're selling does not have illegal tinting. In Section 2, it deals with defining a original installation. There's been some misuse, I would say, of the statute in defining what an original installation is. And so we're hoping to define that in this statute to clarify that. The third portion deals with prescriptions. Right now there's an exemption in the state statute that allows for people who have the need to have window tinting darker than necessary to have a prescription. And this language defines the prescription a little further to clarify the amount of light transmittance and expiration date. And then the last portion deals with police vehicles. Primarily, we're focused on canine vehicles, undercover vehicles, having tinting that's darker than what's required by law right now.
Okay. Members, are there any questions? Then Senator Dahl, would you like to move? Moves that Senate File 3336 be recommended to pass, and I believe it goes to the floor, Senator Foley?
Yes, Madam Chair.
On that motion. Oh, excuse me, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Ms. Tuckner, with are people, are dealers selling, are any new cars being sold with illegally glazed windows, or is this simply consumer add-on?
Is it Major?
Yes.
Major Tuckner.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, what's occurring, we believe, is that when we're stopping these vehicles, the owners of these vehicles are stating they purchased the vehicle that way, whether that was at their request or I believe is probably the case, but there are some being sold with that tinting that's darker than the amount of light transmittance allowed by law.
Senator Marty.
And Madam Chair, Major Tuckner, one more question. In current law, the rear of a limousine is allowed to be darkened. I understand why they darken them, but that's probably the same reason other people do as well. You haven't had any particular problems with either, I presume the hearses don't have a problem, but the limousines, you've never had a problem with that, in other words.
Major Tuckner.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, when we're making our traffic stops, probably a very small percentage are of those types of vehicles. It's more the other motoring vehicles that are out there that are causing us a danger and a danger to the public as well.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Foley.
I think that that's clear that the major concern in regard to what Senator Marty says is officer safety, and we don't want to have someone come up alongside of the vehicle and be in danger of shot or something.
Oh, jeez. I understand. Then on Senator Dahl's motion that Senate File 3336 be recommended to pass, no further discussion. All those, is there anybody in the audience that wanted to speak on this? Then on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and
thank
the
you,
bill's
Major.
Recommended to pass. Thank you.
Thank you,
Major. And Senator Foley. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you,
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is my first time before you. So
I think you're right.
I appreciate the ability to visit you today with a Senate file. And I'm looking for my
3446.
3446, and I do have an amendment.
And that's the A1 amendment, I think.
Yes.
Is this the first? This is the first stop for the bill.
Yes, is the first stop for the bill.
And then this is an author's amendment. Senator Scogin, would you offer the A1 as an author's amendment to
put
the bill?
I would, Madam Chair.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment, the A1 amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Saltzman.
Yes, and thank you, this amendment was put on in the House, and it really reflects that it is no longer a controversial bill. At this point, it is a notification bill that requires insurers to notify small businesses about the two minimum cost plans contained in Statute 62L.05 and the Small Employee Flexible Benefit Plan that you, Madam Chair, authored in 2005. There's nothing else to this bill. There's no controversy. There are no opponents. But essentially what it is doing is alerting small business owners that these plans are available. And they're very important because small businesses are certainly struggling with health care costs, and this is making sure that they're aware that these plans, which have been put into statute, are then available to them. And it's my understanding that there is not controversy at this point with this particular language. While the original bill did cause some concerns, we are happy that this amendment can be put in place and called in, to make sure that our small business owners are aware that these plans are available.
Okay. Further discussion. Ms. Aberholden would like to speak on this bill, or anyone else? You're okay?
Good. That's even better.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 3446 as amended be recommended to pass.
And go to the floor? Go to the floor. Okay. On Senator Pretner Solon's motion, excuse me, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The bill is passed. Thank you,
Senator Committee, Saltzman. I hope I'm always as welcome in this committee. Thank you so much.
Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is very appropriate because, as you all know, this is National Flood Safety Awareness Week. Seriously. And I'm here to speak to Senate File 2980, which quite simply that will make it clear to every homeowner that they can purchase flood insurance even if they are not in a flood plain, assuming their community participates in the National Flood Insurance Program. Apparently, even when I bought my house 3 years ago, we were not informed that we could have bought flood insurance. So this is just making it clear to homeowners that they can indeed provide flood insurance. I do have an amendment, the A1 amendment. I think you have a copy that just clarifies a little language, and it eliminates a phone number that's not necessary for the bill. But it's basically, instead of the words upon delivery, it's just saying annually when they get notice of their policy that, again, they are notified that they can indeed acquire flood insurance.
Okay. Members have the A1 amendment. Senator Dahl will move the A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted, Senator Dahl. To the bill, Senate File 2980. Do you have anyone else who would like to testify? Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl, why would somebody not in a floodplain buy flood insurance?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
why would somebody not in a floodplain buy flood insurance?
That's a good question.
Mr. Sexton?
Mr. Chair, Pat Sexton from the Department of Commerce. Essentially, there's three options. If you're in the floodplain, you have to have flood insurance before you can buy your house. If you're not in the floodplain, but you would maybe want to buy flood insurance, we're making it clear that you have that option. You might have, I can imagine where you have a creek in the backyard or near your house or something like that that you think could flood. I think Bob Johnson may be able to provide a little bit better answer, but we just want to make it clear that if you would like to purchase it, you can.
Senator Marty, then Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, there are lots of homes that flood from other reasons, like water runoff from a storm, low area in a neighborhood. I've got some places in my district that had terrible flooding a number of years ago where the state actually had to buy out some homes to put in flood things in there. But, often people who aren't in a floodplain are very much at risk.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just going to say something very similar to Senator Marty, but then also I would say that I know from talking to Senator Erickson Ropes that there were many people who were damaged by the floods in southeastern Minnesota who were not, some were and some weren't, within the floodplains that in that area. I have
Senator
a personal
Pratt-Nersola.
Situation where I'm in a condo, the second story, and I was the only condo that had a requirement that said they were in a floodplain and had to buy flood insurance. Well, I ended contesting it, and I didn't have to because the condo association buys the flood insurance, but it created quite a problem for a while.
No, don't do that. Would anyone else like to be heard on SFL 2980? Seeing no further discussion, Senator Dahl moves that Senate File 2980 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Bill is passed. Thank you,
Senator
Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Want to go?
Already?
You don't have to.
Sure.
After.
You
already?
Yeah.
Already. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is House File 3411. Section 1 of the bill is advertising the grade of gasoline, specification requirements. Any questions, I can refer to Bob Krohman. Sections 2 through 15 are the department's weights and measure technical pieces, and Mark Buccelli from the department is here to answer any questions if you have any. No questions, then I'd like to move House File 3411.
What is it?
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, when you're talking about a number used to advertise or identify a grade of gasoline, the issue is instead of saying premium, you're going to say 89 octane, and you're only selling 88 octane in the pump?
Senator Marty, I defer to Mr. Krohman, please.
Mr. Krohman, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. Where this came up was last summer, there was a gasoline retailer who was selling Super 95. And folks would stop by, and it was priced really good. And folks would stop by and say, that's a good price for 95 octane. And he'd say, oh, it's not 95 octane. I just like the name 95. There's no law against it. We're hopeful now there will be.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I think that explains the need for it.
Thank you. Further questions from members? If not, Senator Johnson renews her motion that Senate File 3411 be recommended to pass. pass.
Mr. Chair, it's House File 34.
Oh, I'm sorry. House File. That's correct. House File 3411 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The bill is passed. Thank you, Senator Johnson.
I'm sorry. Okay. I had an allergic reaction to something. I'm okay. Thank you. I don't think it was to Mr. Stane. He was on my right side.
No. Do you want me to go back to my office?
So, we've done Senator Saltzman's bill. Senator Dahl's.
Passed.
Your bill?
I believe Sparks will
I wanted
gavel.
To vote for that bill. I'm sorry. Senator Sparks. And we just did that. Okay. My goodness. Senator Sparks, you have several bills here.
Yeah, we do. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The first bill I believe will take up is Senate File 3174.
Senate File 3174. It's next on the agenda, yeah.
This is the Uniform Securities Act name change. The Minnesota Securities Act was enacted in 2006. It provides the framework for regulating the offer and sale of securities and to persons engaged in certain securities-related businesses like broker-dealers and investment advisors. When the Act became effective in 2007, it replaced Minnesota's existing security laws. The amendments restore certain provisions from the predecessor Act and clean up some provisions enacted in 2006. For both the Department of Commerce and those affected by the security laws, these amendments provide regulatory continuity and certainty without compromising protections for Minnesota investors. And with me today, Madam Chair, I have Pat Sexton with the Department of Commerce that can go into a little bit more detail.
And Senator Sparks, when you refer to amendments, you mean the amendments in the that are actually
the bill
and it's amending previous law. Okay. I understand.
Thank you,
and it's a department bill. Mr. Sexton, welcome to our committee.
Hi, Pat Sexton again from the Department of Commerce. Senator Sparks laid it out pretty well. This bill comes about after extensive discussions with our office and the securities bar. The members of the securities bar. We think this is necessary to make sure the securities market continues to operate smoothly and would appreciate your support.
Members have any questions? It's pretty technical stuff, Mr. Sexton.
Correct. There should be absolutely no controversy to this whatsoever.
It looks like there's some numerical references. And
reference.
You said the magic words, Mr.
Right.
Sexton.
I didn't say that.
No, members have any questions. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this? It's been around for a few weeks, so if anybody had any issues, they probably would have come forth. And you collaborated with the bar.
Absolutely.
Regarding this.
Exactly right.
On the Sparks motion, then, and there's no amendments.
No amendments, Madam
Sparks
Chair.
Motion that Senate File 3174 be recommended to pass. No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks, thank you. There goes Senate File 3174. Do you want to do 1578 next?
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, and this is a fairly simple bill as well. Some of you might have remembered a few years ago we carried AARP's credit freeze provision, and that was passed into law. Since that identity theft was a real issue, we wanted to make sure that we came back. This makes a small change in what it does in page 1.19. It just allows for the payment of a security freeze to be by something other than a credit card, either cash or check, because a lot of times what we were finding when the people were trying to freeze that credit card, they didn't want to have another transaction on their credit card. So this would simply allow them to pay by a different form when they're trying to get that freeze in place, Madam Chair.
So, Senator Sparks, I'm looking for the bill. This is embarrassing, but got a copy here. Do all members have it? Senate File 1578. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to Senate File 1578? Any questions from members? That's pretty straightforward. No discussion. All those in favor then of Senate File 1578, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks, you're on a roll here.
Two for two. Let's see if we can keep it going, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Senate File 2765.
On Senate File 2765.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this bill is a continuation of an effort to eliminate the unethical form of insurance fraud known as the use of runners. In recent years, a very small number of health care providers, lawyers, and unlicensed individuals have been recruiting accident victims as well as people who have not even been in an accident or who have faked being in an accident to engage in an unnecessary and fictitious treatment of the purpose of generating false or unjustified insurance claims. The persons involved are either paid flat fees or get a portion of the insurance payments. In 2002, Minnesota passed legislation criminalizing the activities of these recruiters and others involved in this scam. Even after the passage of the 2002 legislation, this type of fraud can still occur. In order to close this avenue, Senate File 2765 that you have before you proposes that in a limited area of automobile accidents, the direct contact of an injured person for the purpose of influencing that person to receive treatment be declared to be an unethical practice. Violations could result in suspension or loss of the violator's professional license. With me today, Madam Chair, I have Dave Kuntz, and I believe we have a few other people that can testify on behalf of the bill as well.
Mr. Kuntz, a warm welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Kuntz. I am Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. We're here in support of this bill today. It's been an ongoing problem that we've tried to address with different remedies. The latest one, the Supreme Court in Niles Wellness case, overturned what we were doing. We had Dr. Todd Crabtree was going to be here today, but he was in court. And he actually wrote the opinion in the Isles Wellness case that the judge depended upon in that case. And had he been here today, he would testify that well, on that case, he was arguing the First Amendment rights. Knowing the real world today, he would not write that same opinion. So glad to have him on our side on this one. And we hope this will address the problems we have and keep a chiropractor's name out of the newspapers. Appreciate your support.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just echo whether we're Senator Sparks made some statements about attorneys and doctors, and I think the thing to emphasize there is he said a few, because most of these professionals, in the absence of any legislation, had their own ethical standards that prohibited that type of direct solicitation. And attorneys just in general are prohibited from directly soliciting clients. And every once in a while, however, there are some bad actors that give everyone else a bad name. And I think the same thing is true in the chiropractic profession, that in general, you know, as with other medical professionals, people are not out soliciting directly. But to the extent that happens a few times, no one wants that happening because it gives everybody a bad name that's associated with that profession.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from members? Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify on Senate File 2765? Mr. Kuntz, when did we first pass that legislation? Did you say 2002?
2002, and we worked on it a couple years before that, trying to do it.
We're going to get it right this time.
Madam Chair, this bill does apply to all health care professionals, and I think that's important. And our real concern for this one was because we have companies coming in from Florida setting up practices and doing some abusive things, so we want to get that shut down.
So, any other questions from members? Then Senator Sparks is going to move that Senate File 2765 be recommended to pass. Any questions or discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And then, members, I'm going to turn this over to Senator Sparks, and I'm going to do Senate File 3594, and then.
Wait before you.
Oh, thanks.
Okay.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 3594. Well, you know what? I should get the amendment on the A1 amendment. It's a delete everything, and we should do that.
Okay.
Hi.
You have it?
We still continue.
We can put, it's an author's amendment.
Right. Mr. Chairman, okay. Yes, I move the A1 amendment.
Okay, they're coming around. Senator Scheid has moved the A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill has to do with title insurance, and it was proposed by the Minnesota Land Title Association. And their legislative committee, and it brings an old friend here, Mr. Henschel, who chairs that legislative committee, and then Mr. Unger,
yes,
who is president of the Land Title Association, Minnesota Land Title Association. So they're here to help me with the technicalities of this. But it does three things, I believe. It adds a definition of title insurance, which I was surprised that we don't already have a statute that does define that. So I want to make sure that would be at the bottom of page 3 of the amendment, describing title insurance in Chapter 68A. Then it clarifies that there's a limitation on the role that notaries can play in a residential real estate closing. That it limits the role when they don't have a licensed closing agent doing that. And I believe that would be at the Section 3 on page 4. Okay. And then it removes an exception in state law that allows certain lenders not to have what are called qualified funds at closings. And I may have one of these gentlemen explain that better for you, but I don't. Do you want to speak to it, Marty?
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Henschel will address the bill, please.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Martin Henschel. I'm vice president of the Edina Realty Title, but here in my capacity as legislative chair of the Minnesota Land Title Association. In 1998, there was a bill passed that required lenders to have what's known as qualified funds at a closing, meaning they got to have real money at the closing. They got to have wired funds or certified funds, but there was an exception created for lenders that had an established business relationship, meaning that they'd already done over 25 deals with the title company. Then they could provide a draft or a check, and the title company could accept that. Given the what I keep referring to as today's real estate market and the credit climate that has arisen since, especially in since about August of last year, we've had more and more concern with taking funds from any lender that isn't qualified funds. So this is our proposal to eliminate that exception for established business relationship and put all lenders on a level playing field and make sure that all lenders have to provide wired funds or a certified check at the closing so that we know that check that was, give an example, Bear Stearns, Friday you would have taken their check all day long. Monday, I don't know. We're just trying to make sure that the money coming from the lender is good money, because we're cutting checks at the closing directly to the seller and pay off their mortgage, and we need to make sure that those funds clear.
That's clear. Did you want to say anything? I guess Mr. Unger is fine with what Mr. Henschel said, and I understand it very well.
Makes sense.
I don't know if there's anybody here that would like to speak.
Would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 3594? Further questions from the members? Seeing none, Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 3594 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The bill is passed.
Thank you.
Senator Scheid. Thank you. Senator.
Thank you.
Senator,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Is it Senator Olson?
Olson. Senator Olson.
Still working on it. We just took it down.
Oh, somebody wants to. Is Thomas Olson on?
He was here.
Okay, from the old mayor down there.
Sometimes.
Firefighter.
Sometimes.
Senator Olson, I'm Senate File 3508. Do you want to do it from there?
Madam Chair, well, I just wanted to say that there's an amendment being drafted, and that's why if we could just, if we have anything else or any other business for a couple of minutes, I think it should be here any time.
That's fine. We need Senator Tomassoni, right? So we're going to recess until for a few minutes. But I don't want anybody leaving. This is not outdoor recess. Watch them. I know Senator Olson has an the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee will resume. Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
On Senate File 3328.
Madam Chair, Senate File 3328 refers to credit cards and unattended point of sale. I think what it's trying to do is...
Well, Senator Tomassoni, we certainly want to know what you
think.
Well, I appreciate the candor.
I think what it's trying to do is to make sure that people who, for example, go to a gas pump and use a credit card at the gas pump don't have to be orally told over a loudspeaker that there is a surcharge on the credit card. But I'm not exactly sure that that's what it does, so I should maybe have Mr. Krogman try and give me his version of what it says, and then maybe the committee can tell us what they think it says.
Is there an amendment or anything?
I don't know.
Just dealing with the bill as is.
I think so.
Senate File 3328. Okay. Mr. Krogman, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogman, Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. The first part of the bill, the non-underlying part, has been state law for several years. It allows for a surcharge when somebody uses a credit card if you inform the purchaser orally and in writing at the time of purchase. Clause B, the underlying portion, simply a very wordy way of saying that at a pay at the pump, you wouldn't have to inform them orally because it's problematic. Pay at the pump is one of the few, if maybe the only place, where you can use your credit card and not have to sign a receipt. It's unattended. This would say we don't have to orally inform them. Now, how this will most likely be used, though state law allows for a surcharge on a credit card, the contracts with MasterCard and Visa prohibit credit card surcharges, so we couldn't do that. How this comes up is when someone posts a cash price on their sign. Let's say it says $2.95 cash. On the pump, you'd have $3. That's the credit card price. Well, we would put up a sign that says this is the credit card price. And customers invariably think it is a surcharge for credit. It is really not. It is a discount for cash. The reason the credit card company or credit card price is higher is because of the fee we pay to the credit card companies. If you use your card to buy a gallon of gas for $3, the electronic network charges you $3 and you get a bill that says pay me. That same electronic network deposits $2.94 in our account when you have a 2% what's called a discount rate. That is why the credit card price is higher. We have at 2% and $3, we have about a 6 cent a gallon fee for you using your credit card. This simply would let our customers more precisely know what's going on. Second part of the bill talks about somebody imposing a minimum purchase. Where this came about is folks who probably, well, no, next to a couple of them next to a high school. Where when it gets out, kids come over, get a can of pop and a candy bar for $1.50. And they give them the credit card. Well, the fee is 1.8% plus 27 cents a transaction. You don't make any money on that can of pop and a candy bar. This says you could post a sign, may post a sign, that says minimum credit card use $5, $2, whatever you wanted to put. I hope that explains it. I try to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, I don't think Part D says you may post a sign. I think it says you may impose a minimum amount allowable as a seller. The first part says you have to post a sign.
Yes, yes. You may impose and then you would post a sign.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni. So under the first part of your bill here, if the sign out on the road says gas costs $3.19 a gallon, let's just say, are gas stations allowed to charge more than that amount that would be posted out on the road?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Krogman,
Senator Olson, I don't know if
Senator Tomasoni,
I'm
sorry.
I'm not sure I agree with Mr. Krogman's interpretation of this bill. Because
Senator Tomasoni,
I've seen signs at gas stations that say 3 cent discount for cash. Now, I don't know if anybody imposes if anybody puts the cash price up on them, and that might be true. They might do that, but I think that this just says that somebody is charging a surcharge and on a credit card, and that because of that surcharge, they have to notify both orally and by us. And a signature on the seller's premises. And what this bill is allowing to have happen, I think, is that that when you go like this with the card at the pump, where you're charging a surcharge, that it allows you to post a sign on the pump and say there's a surcharge being charged to you when you use your credit card, and they don't have to orally or by signature notify you. And so I think that's a little bit different than what he's talking about, because I think what he's talking about is a 3% discount, is a three cent discount for cash. And when you go to the pump, it tells you what you pay for when you use your credit card, and if you go inside and pay with cash, then you get the 3 cents off that price. So I'm not sure that I don't know if I agree with
him. Well, Senator Tomasoni, we get the point.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I thought we said the same thing.
Mr. Krogman, it seems, I mean, I see what current law says up there in lines 1.7 to 111, and so it says there can be a surcharge already today, but you have to tell the person orally, whether face-to-face or over the intercom, and it also has to be written notice on a sign that's conspicuous. Okay. But aren't you free to still put a sign up that says 3 cent discount for cash? That's different than authorizing the surcharge. I think that's what Senator Tomasoni and why he's thinking it's different from what you said. So you could do that today, right? You don't need state law to tell you that you can offer a 3 cent or whatever cent discount per gallon of gas if you pay cash. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Mr. Krogman, is correct. You do not need state law to do that. But the contractual arrangement between MasterCard and Visa and the retailer requires a cash, requires that there be no surcharge for credit. So if someone is taking a credit card at the pump or inside the station for gasoline, by contract, they can't charge a surcharge. They can post a cash discount. And when I was talking about posting the cash discount on the main sign and the credit card price being different, it is the perception of a surcharge, where in reality it's picking up the fee that we have to pay. And it is confusing. But we would be complying with the contract by not charging a surcharge. We'd be offering a discount for cash. But since the two prices would be different, the sign, we hope, would be explanatory.
Would the sign, Mr. Krogman, say,
I think you got to cut.
There's a surcharge? Because that's what it says.
It would.
You're informing the purchaser of a surcharge. It's not saying you're telling them they would get a discount for cash.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Mr. Krogman.
It probably would not, because it is not a surcharge, but we have customers who perceive it as that way. And we want to be very straightforward with them.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Tomassoni.
Oh, I have to ask Mr. Krogman something about this surcharge, because I think what we're talking about is that when you use your credit card, the dealer or the store owner gets charged a 2% fee, but whatever the number shows up on the pump, if you paid $40 for gas, that's what you get charged on your credit card. Now, we're not talking about a surcharge on top of the $40, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Tomassoni, no, we are not.
No. Okay.
You know, I think we need to change some language in here then. Senator Olson, were you going to speak to that?
Well, my concern is, first of all, I guess I'm confused, because if you say that the credit card companies don't allow you to charge a surcharge, so you kind of have to do it sort of in a reverse way, kind of like on taxes, whether you're getting a credit or whatever, it seems to me it amounts to sort of the same thing. But the language of the statute talks about surcharges, and that's what your amendment also talks about is surcharges. And it seems like before we had a policy against these surcharges in the sense that you were only allowed to do them if you really made clear that everybody understood. And I'm a little bit worried that now what we would do with your amendment is we'd end up with a sign that says one thing, you know, in big bold print, 315, and then when you bring them in, there'll be a small thing on the pump that says, but by the way, if you use your credit card, it's 320. You know, and it seems to me that making sure that customers don't come in unless they understand, especially since more and more everybody uses these things now, I think you should have to not be careful that we don't create kind of a bait and switch kind of an environment.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Krogman.
The statute as it is now was written before pay at the pump. Mm-hmm. And it envisioned a face-to-face transaction. Now we have pay at the pump. And the whole reason we wanted to do this was to make those two different prices, you're right, more explanatory without one of our customers saying, wait a minute, you got to do this too.
It is
allowable under the weights and measures law to post a sign that says 305 as long as you give in on that same sign the criteria for that price. For example, if you post a sign that says 305 cash,
you'll find out.
That says to get that price you have to pay cash. Then the credit card price on the pump at the card reader can be different. You have a sign there that says this is the credit card price.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Tomassoni.
I think that what this bill is doing.
I feel your pain, Senator
But I think that what this bill is doing is making legal what everybody does every single day when they go to the gas station and they use their credit card. Because I've never, ever used my credit card at a pump and had somebody yell to me over the loudspeaker, there's a surcharge on your credit card. I've never had anybody do that. So I think it's just making a common practice that we have right now legal, and then actually putting a sign on the pump to let people know that there's a charge on their credit card, which is included in the price of the gas.
And then if I might ask, Mr. Krogman, if I were using a Visa or MasterCard, are those the only two that do not allow the use of a surcharge?
Madam Chair, I know MasterCard and Visa do not, because of a couple of experiences some of our members have had where they've gotten letters and visits. I've been told that American Express also does not. I have not been told anything about Discover or Ride Express or any of those.
Okay. Are there any questions of members? I see some puzzled faces. Is Senator Prentner-Solon.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Tomassoni, am I to assume, though, that the price that flicks on when you press the pump, if it says $305, that's the price you're going to be charged, or is there a surcharge also attached?
Mr. Krogman.
Senator
Tomassoni.
The way I'm thinking of this, when you use your credit card and it says $305, you're paying that amount on your credit card, and the dealer is charged a percentage for usage of that credit card, so he doesn't get quite as much of a sale as he would if he paid cash. Now, the word surcharge has me confused here, because I'm not sure if there's a charge up and above the $305 that will show up on the credit card use, and I don't think there is, but Mr. Krogman knows.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Maybe I could ask a clarifying question then. If the person went inside and paid cash, would they pay less than the $305?
It depends on the station. Some places offer cash discounts, some don't. So if you go to a place where they have a cash discount, you can get your 45 cents back for 15 gallons, you know, but it depends on the particular place where you're buying the gas.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Tomassoni, what's the purpose of the bill? What language could we have that would assure that the consumer knows, is informed about what they're getting?
Well,
Senator Tomassoni.
Madam Chair, Senator Prentner-Solon, I think what, like I said earlier, what the bill's doing is just putting into law what people are already doing. Because have any of you ever been yelled at over the loudspeaker that there's a surcharge on your credit card at a gas station? Because I never have. I don't know if they
Senator Tomassoni, I've been yelled at for other things. It's true.
So,
you have to lift the lever to make the gas go. Those kinds of things.
But never push the start button. I think it's just codifying so that people aren't actually breaking the law by not informing you over the loudspeaker that there is a surcharge. But like I said to Mr. Krogman earlier, if the surcharge is something up and above the credit card fee that the dealer is paying for use of the card, and it shows up as, instead of $40 on your bill, it shows up as $45 because you got charged a $5 surcharge for using your card, then I think it's a different situation. And I don't think that's what it is, right? It's just that fee that the charges.
I think it could not exceed 5% of the purchase price in current law. So $45 with the gas, you could charge, let's see, $4.52 and a quarter. A surcharge on that, and I think some people would be unpleasantly surprised. I think that as I'm looking at current law on line 1.7 down, and B, I think we probably, that whole little section needs attention, because I don't think we want to preclude a dealer's ability to offer a lower price for cash. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, And Senator Tomassoni, I guess this is how I think it would be different than what's in existing law. Right now, in order to get the cash price, just as a matter of practice at least, in order to get the cash price, you're going to have to go in and pay for this in cash. So there's going to require that face-to-face transaction in order to get the cash price. But if we don't require a person to actually go in, it's going to be much easier to now then have a situation, if we adopt this language, where you've got this sign out there that says 319 and then in small print maybe cash, and then you come to the pump and there's a price that looks like you think that's what you're paying, but there's somewhere there that it's saying cash. And then you're going to have some posting somewhere on the pump that says, you know, but if you're using a credit card, it's really, the price is really something else.
No, I can't.
I guess that's what concerns me.
Oh, Madam Chair, what?
Senator Tomassoni.
Senator Olson, what would happen is if the, like I said, the ones I've seen have said 3-cent discount for cash or 5-cent discount for cash, but if they did post the cash price on the marquee outside the gas station, when you got to the pump, the credit card price would be at the pump, and you would have to go inside to get your discount for the gas.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, but Senator Tomassoni, I guess that's my point. I know that's what's happening now, but if we make this change, because you had to go in and have that oral conversation to get the cash price, if we take that out of there, the practice of how this is handled could change because we'd be allowing that possibility.
I don't think we're doing that here.
Senator Tomassoni. Mr. Krogman.
Madam Chair. Senator Olson, I'm not aware of any pumps that have cash acceptors on them. I'm not aware, there may be some, but I'm not aware of any pumps where you can put a dollar bill in to pay. Our pumps are set and proved by weights and measures. The price that you're looking at is what you pay, and it also computes as to the gallons out to a hundredth of a point. We could not, on our meters, change, they're sealed. We could not change that to reflect a cash price on the outside and take a credit card at that same meter. You have to go inside to get the cash discount because the meter can't do it. The pump can't do it.
So, Mr. Krogman, wouldn't it be just easier to say cash discount available if the sign just said, you know, save 3 cents or a nickel a gallon for paying cash, and the person could make the computation themselves?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that is what many of the signs do. As you're pumping the gas, you'll see the sign in the window. With this, it would make it easier to offer that cash discount on the sign on the boulevard.
And, Madam Chair, I think...
Senator Tomassoni.
I'm going to try this one more time. I think the only thing the bill is doing is saying that if you use your credit card at a pump and you drive away, that it's making the subdivision one, and it's an exception to subdivision one that you don't have to be orally informed that there's a surcharge on your card because there's a little sign on the pump that tells you that you are being surcharged.
And okay, Senator Tomassoni, and is that included in the price you're seeing?
Yes.
In other words, if it's $3 a gallon,
well,
$3 and 9 tenths, because Krogman it would have to be that 9 tenths.
Let's see if Krogman might be able to tell you.
You
that
can tell me that.
Madam Chair, yes, because if we were to surcharge for credit, our contract would be canceled and we couldn't take MasterCard and Visa anymore.
So I'm
their
thinking.
Their contract strictly prohibits that.
I'm thinking we probably shouldn't be using the word surcharge in statute here. But I don't know if Mr. Stang...
Madam Chair, the word surcharge is in statute because that can apply, I guess, at other places like a restaurant or something like that where you use a credit card. They may be able to surcharge, you know. It's $10 for the steak, and if you use a credit card, it's $10.20. They may be able to do that. That's why we didn't look at changing the whole statute. This applies to any use of a credit card.
All right, this is in Chapter 325, which is Consumer Protection Statutes.
Madam Chair, in our local electric co-op, if customers pay with a credit card, there's a surcharge so that the co-op still collects the full price and the cost of using the credit card.
And they show you that on the bill, Senator
Scogin? That's legal.
Right. I don't know if it's legal or not.
After this discussion, I was thinking that, too. It might not be legal because I get that surtax on my
cabin.
Now, let's check that out.
Adam Senator Vandeveer.
Class action suit.
Senator
Vandeveer.
Couldn't you start pumping the gas and go inside and get your discount and then come back out while it's pumping?
Oh, you would think. Oh, no.
Senator Vandeveer, don't you dare leave that pump unattended.
Okay.
Thanks.
So. And we have a sign where I usually purchase gas. It says that. It just doesn't have my name on it, which I'm glad of.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Okay, Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, the way I understand it is they're going to be allowed to have a discounted for cash price on the billboard.
I don't think it has anything to do with this.
Okay,
it's all about, it's all about use of a credit card in the pump and not being told orally that you're being surcharged.
Okay, so...
Senator Johnson.
So
if you pay $20 each
if
time,
it says 305 on the billboard, it's 305 at the pump.
Senator Tomasoni.
It still has, absolutely nothing to do with this bill. If it's if 305 is the cash price and it's and the credit card price is 308, it'll be 308 at the pump. Okay.
So the sign up above out on Highway 81 where I go could say 305?
If it says
and when I get to the pump, it might say 308. Is that what you're saying?
If it says cash, if it says it's a cash discount, but
at the pump, but not up on the sign that brought me in.
The sign that brought you in might say 305 cash.
No,
price.
That's false.
Okay, if it says cash price, the credit card price is going to be at the pump, and then
yeah,
you got to go inside.
Issue.
Then you have to go inside the store to get your cash discount. But I don't think it has anything to do with this bill.
Senator Tomasoni, I think we need this. We need some work. And it's not just your bill. I think we're getting, you know, I understand there's a cost to retailers to offer credit. On the other hand, it's almost a requirement for people because they may not carry $60 or $70 to pay for a tank of gas. They're using their credit card because in my communities you pay, you prepay. So,
well, Madam Chair, I think the only thing that's not
Senator
clear
Tomasoni?
Here, I think the only thing that's not clear here is what the meaning of surcharge is.
Well,
and if it means that the dealer can charge you up to 2% of the purchase price, up and above what the credit card company is already charging you, then you're going to see $40 and $42 on your bill instead of $40.
Well, I don't think that they're allowed to by the terms of their contract with the credit card company, Senator Tomasoni. So it really almost doesn't make sense for us to allow a surcharge when
they can't do it
the
anyway.
Credit card companies, the banks, aren't.
And so the only thing the bill is really doing is saying we're going to post a sign on the pump to be in compliance with the law.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've been meandering all over the place and everybody's questions about what's on billboards and things like that. I think Senator Tomasoni's bill is very simple and straightforward. I've read through it a number of times here. I understand completely what he's getting at. It's
Did you explain it to all of us?
Well, now Senator Gerlach.
You use your credit card. They can put a sign on the thing that says it's going to be a surcharge, but you don't. They don't have to tell you orally. That's all it is. On the first section, that's all it is. It's very simple and straightforward. I think we're meandering into so
Madam
many
Chair.
Other different areas, and I think we should just look at it at its face value and not try to solve all the other issues about other things here. And I think we should just stick to that, and let's just pass the bill. I think it's a good bill.
There may be some wisdom in what Senator Gerlach says, Senator Olson, and then Senator Olson.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. It didn't occur to me until we got halfway through this conversation that we weren't just talking about gas stations, though, and situations at the pump. And when it was raised that actually there are places that are allowed to charge surcharges, I don't know what all of them are. But it seems to me then that anytime someone, say, goes into a restaurant and you're paying your bill, or you're going to go pay for your medical services when you leave the hospital, or any kinds of situations where you're paying for something at the point with a credit card that you probably would like to know, and that's probably why we have this oral thing in here to begin with as far as consumer protection, that you want to have it drawn to your attention if the bill that you're getting that you think you're paying isn't actually the charge that's going to come on your credit card, that it's going to be something more, that this is not just limited to those gas station situations. This is limited to any situation where someone's paying with a credit card.
Well, Madam Chair, but Senator
Olson. Senator Tomasoni?
This is where you don't get a receipt, though. Only where you don't get a receipt. So if you're not getting a receipt for your assignment.
Well, it's really if it's not assigned. A person.
Assigned receipt.
Right.
This is where you're not signing a receipt. So it has to be a place where you're just putting in the credit card in and the machine approves the sale.
Okay.
I'm going to Senator Pretner Solon.
So just a piece of clarification then, Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni. The receipt that you get, does that actually reflect everything that you're being charged? Does it include the surcharge?
Unintended.
Mr. Krogman?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes. The receipt that you get does reflect both in gallons and dollars and cents what you did charge. It is not signed. That is the distinguishing difference between what's called a CRIN system, card reader in the pump,
this makes
versus
sense.
Face-to-face transaction.
Right.
Senator Gerlach, I appreciate what you're saying, but apparently surcharge doesn't work in terms of the contract with the banks. So if a dealer or anybody wants to offer a cash discount, they can do it. I mean, I don't see anything in this section that doesn't allow that. But,
Madam Chair.
You know, Senator Gerlach?
The prohibition about surcharges, that's contractual. That's not law. That's a credit card company. There's a big difference there. So that's why we care about that.
Well, Senator Gerlach, I don't think that they'd be in violation of their contract with the bank if they add a surcharge to me as the customer if I'm using my Visa.
Right. Well, yes, but Madam Chair, but this is allowable language. If they negotiate a contract that allows them to, they're fine. This is at the higher level here. The state, the law is saying they can do this. But if their contract says they can't, well, then they can't. I mean, isn't that right there? Mr. Stang's nodding his head.
He does.
He's just saying.
Do you want him to explain it?
He tried. Senator Tomasoni, I think it needs work, but...
Well, what does Mr. Stang think it says?
Well,
he's good.
I can tell you what he offers.
I think,
can you read that?
I think Mr. Krogman is telling us that the credit card companies don't allow him to do what Subdivision 1 authorizes him to do. So the point of clarifying that any further escapes me.
Madam Chair?
But that's not what my bill is talking about. My bill is talking about the next line.
Well, so but it still is a clarification of A. I mean, it's an iteration of it. Senator Olson?
Could we pass D and then maybe come back to where we're at with B? If there are some, I guess I don't know what's going to happen or if Senator Tomasoni just wants to have us vote on his bill, but I don't think anyone has any concerns or questions or objections to D, subsection D with your bill.
I might. No, but
Senator
I think
Tomasoni, I don't know if we want you on this committee or not. I'm trying to decide.
Senator Gerlach, I think expressed it exactly right. All this does is allow for a sign to be posted in a spot where there is a credit card accepting machine for payment of a purchase instead of an oral advisory that you are about to pay a surcharge. It's a convenience thing, basically.
Senator Tomasoni, and if I pulled in off the highway because I saw the sign that was, you know, lighted and told me what the price was, and I went in and I get out of my car, and sometimes I check what the price is on the pump and sometimes I don't, I think... And I don't always look at that sign that tells me to stay.
It's
pay attention to the pump either.
This is not relevant to what we're trying to do here.
Well, yes, Senator Tomasoni, it's about a sign because it's saying you don't have to orally inform, which means you have to do a sign.
No. When you put your credit card, into the pump that accepts the credit card, pump of gas. All right, you pay the price that's on the pump. Okay. Now, if you're going to get a cash discount, it's totally irrelevant to this bill. You can walk inside and you get your cash discount. And if the price you're seeing up on the billboard is a cash discount price, it still has absolutely nothing to do with this bill because it's just saying if you use your credit card, then the person inside the store doesn't have to get on the loudspeaker and saying, you're using your credit card, you will be charged a surcharge. There's going to be a little sign on the pump that says, if you're using your credit card, you will be charged a surcharge, instead of the person inside the store orally yelling through the microphone that you have to, I mean, that's all the bill does. It really doesn't have anything to do with a cash discount, I don't think.
Senator Dahl.
I'm with you, Madam Chair, on the confusion. But you don't have to go into the store to get a cash discount.
There
I mean, the pump's still around where you push cash and you get a different number that shows up on the pump? Than you would if you did a credit card?
Well, you got to go inside and pay. You can't pay it.
But that's true. After the fact.
Yeah.
After the fact. But I'll tell you what, there's already a dozen signs on the pump. Here's my...
I know about one of them, Senator Dahl.
My last point, Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
My concerns are the same, and if this does that, I'll trust you. But if it says 305 on the sign, I better be paying 305, whether I pay cash or credit card, unless there's a big old sign that says discount on cash. But I don't.
Senator Dahl, did you wish to move to delete lines 112 from through 115? And then my intention, my instruction would be to Senator Tomasoni, and I don't know that if by the time we finish today, because we're not meeting tonight over this or any other bill, and it's our last meeting before the second deadline, you may be able to work out some language. I would suggest you deal with parents A as well as the new B so that it makes sense. You could do that before we finish today or by the floor. I mean, I'm willing to let you work on this, Senator Tomasoni, and keep your bill moving. Kind of, I don't know, Senator Dahl, do you want to?
For discussion purposes, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Members, Senator Olson thought that was a possibility. Do you? Then Senator Dahl moves to delete lines 112 to 115. Any further discussion of that, Mr. Krogman or Senator Tomasoni?
Well, I think we're making this way too complicated. But.
Well, you know, Senator Tomasoni, it's not really your fault because I think current law is complicated, and it goes, it predates the time when we were prepaying at the pump. So,
Madam Chair, if you delete
Mr.
112
Krogman.
Through 115, you have current law.
That's right.
Right. So then we, at the pump, would have to inform orally.
Which nobody does.
Right. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator, but we would still have the new provision you have about a minimum amount allowable, which keeps the bill alive and gives an opportunity to maybe work out some of these other languages. That would be, you know, the point would be to try to work out some of these questions and instead of just not going anywhere with it.
Well, I don't have a vote here.
Senator
so
Tomasoni.
I don't have a vote here, so I'm at the whim of the committee.
Senator Tomasoni, it's not a whim, it's mercy.
We're trying to help you.
So, and I think, I haven't heard anybody say they wouldn't be willing to entertain something on that, but it is complex, probably more so than it needs to be, at least in what we think the intendant. If you want to be able to get a cash rebate or whatever you want to call it, then I think that should be allowable, but
I think surcharge is really
confusing.
Can I say this one more time?
Senator Thompson.
The cash price has absolutely nothing to do with this bill. It's all about putting your credit card into the pump and being orally notified that you're about to pay a surcharge because you're using your credit card. And the bill says that they don't have to orally notify you because they're going to put a sign on the pump that says you're going to be surcharged if you use your credit card.
Okay. On the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
No.
The amendment does not, the motion does not prevail. So we have the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you. I think Senator Gerlach and Senator Tomasoni have hit it right on the head. We don't want to cloud it up with how we're advertising our gas price or where we got to go to get our cash discount. We want to know that when we slide that credit card in the slot at the gas pump that there may be a charge for using the credit card. And it's going to be a little sign right there on the pump. And you know that going in, and you've all done it, and they just want to do it legally because they are not orally notifying us now like they're supposed to. So they want to just have the sign there so that we know what we're doing when we use the card. And the gas price and the cash price are all different issues. What did you say?
So, Senator Scogin, are you moving?
I would like to move Senate File 3328, recommended to pass, and
move to the floor.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to the bill?
How would you know what to say?
Members understand any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
Division.
All those in favor, raise your hand, please. Six. All those opposed? It clearly passes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Metzen.
You know, if you buy $20 worth of gas every time you go in, the price never changes.
Words of wisdom. We're going to be listening to that on the floor.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for your patience.
Thank you. The bill, the motion did prevail, and Senate File 3328 was recommended to pass. Senator Olson. And if anybody
knows what this bill is. Wait till he tries to explain that on the floor.
Senator Olson, the amendment has arrived that you spoke of, I believe, the A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members and Madam Chair, for allowing me to come back a second time with this bill. As you may recall, we heard testimony a week or so ago from both the insurance industry and from the auto body repair industry, with some concern that there be a balance there, that if the auto body industry is required to purchase the technology and software for determining losses, that there would not be arbitrary reductions in what they were paid by the insurance industry to ensure that consumers receive quality repairs, and basically to find a balance to treat both sides fairly. There were a couple of concerns raised by Mr. Johnson, who testified on behalf of the insurance industry. One of them was that with the legislation as originally drafted, it wasn't tight enough in terms of the reference that could be used. If you recall, Senator Dahl had a concern, and some of the rest of you may have had a concern, that he showed something that had been pulled off the internet that nobody, you know, was actually using. That would be something that the insurance companies would not have agreed to adhere to. So that was one of the concerns that was raised. And then another concern that was raised had to do with certain particular circumstances that might mean that because of the circumstances of that particular accident, there really wasn't an applicability of what was in the manual. So maybe a reason to believe that this was kind of a unique situation and we shouldn't have consumers paying more for repairs than actually would be warranted. And so because of those concerns, I tried to draft something with this amendment that addresses both of those concerns, finds a balance, and does it in a very simple, straightforward, and fair way. And so what the A2 amendment does that's in front of you is simply says unilaterally, in other words, not one party or the other, and we assume here we're talking about the insurance industry because the reference goes back to them, so that the insurance companies could not unilaterally disregard a repair operation or cost. And those repair operations or cost are what's defined in these software systems, identifying by an estimating system which an insurer and collision repair facility have agreed to utilize. So in other words, it can't be just anything that they've pulled out of wherever. It's got to be something both parties have agreed to use in doing the estimating. And they can't disregard it without a showing of good cause. So in any situation where there's good cause to deviate, they would still have the opportunity to deviate. They just couldn't do it, disregard things unilaterally and with no good cause. So that was the balance that I attempted to strike with this amendment, kept it very simple and straightforward, and I would appreciate the committee's support.
And is Mr. Schoonover?
Mr. Schoonover,
did you wish to speak to the amendment? Do you think that
Madam Chair,
yes, Mr. Members Schoonover, of the committee, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back. I think it does. We did work with meet with the insurers and try to address this issue so that we don't want to ram this down anybody's throat. We want to do what's right for all parties involved. We don't want to be a Rhode Island or a Massachusetts that was referred to last week that have the highest premiums in the country. That's not our goal here. Our goal here is just to make sure that our members of the collision repair industry in Minnesota get fairly compensated for what they do every day.
Mr. Schoonover, do you have an agreement with an insurer that you would use a certain program for estimating? Do you do those? Is that common now? I shouldn't ask you if you personally do, but is that typical in the industry?
Madam Chair, what takes place right now is the three databases, the three estimating systems that any repair shop is free to use. A lot of insurers are going to an open platform, meaning they're allowing shops to use whatever estimating system or database they prefer. However, there's some insurers that will not, that only use one.
There are now currently, you're saying?
Currently, correct. The challenge comes is to who is going to be, once we agree that you have a fender bender, your insurance company is involved with the repair, I'm the repair shop, I automatically agree that your insurance is using that database. And then I agree to go ahead and use that database with the assumption that your insurance company is going to abide by the procedural pages of that database and not deviate from those. My estimating system will be different just because it's on a different platform. That's not our argument today. Our argument today is that within the scope of that repair system, that estimating system, that there's no deviations made from within those procedures and operations.
And Madam Chair, this actually does allow for deviations with a showing of good cause, so it doesn't give the repair shops exactly what they were asking for, but because of concerns that this committee had, I drafted this amendment as an attempt to strike a balance between the two sides.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, was there any attempt to identify good cause?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, good cause is language that basically has a legal definition that's essentially recognized in case law, so that when you talk about good cause, you could also talk about a reasonable basis. You could talk about something that's an identifiable thing. But basically, the courts are going to look at this and say that you have to be able to articulate something that makes sense. You know, it's kind of a common sense standard that isn't really specifically defined in statute in most cases, because it kind of depends on the circumstances of what you're talking about. But it's basically saying you've got to have a good common sense reason to be deviating from that standard. And so, as I said, it's not exactly what the industry was looking for, but it's a compromise.
Is there anybody here who would like to speak to that or to this amendment? Because it replaces, Senator Olson's replacing all of the language on page two, with the language of the amendment. Mr. Johnson, welcome.
Madam Chair and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I appreciate the efforts. We did have a meeting in good faith to meet with the industry, collision repair. Yeah, I'm sorry for that choice of words.
Thank you.
Probably not the right day for that.
No,
But it was a good faith meeting.
Yes, and we understand that.
It's got a positive connotation in some places. But, Madam Chair, actually, here's my dilemma, and I'm sure about this. I haven't seen these words until 30 seconds ago. And it makes a difference what we do here in terms of the relationship between auto insurers and collision repair facilities in terms of what people are paying for repairs. And I appreciate the pull back away from those three clauses that were in the original bill. And I think the dilemma I have right now is that this isn't a court proceeding. So I appreciate Senator Olson's comments about a showing of good cause, but we're not in litigation. This is a relationship between the auto insurer and the body shops. And the insurer conduct is regulated solely by the Commerce Department. So who would we make a showing to make a decision if there's a dispute? There are a lot of transactions going on in repairs. And today, those decisions are not subject to anybody's approval or review. So if now in this day-to-day relationship in car repairs, somebody's going to have to decide if there was a good cause to deviate, I think we're introducing a I do appreciate the effort here to try to step back away from the rigidly applying the manuals, which everybody agrees they're not intended to do. But we want to have that give and take in the process. But the way it's drafted right now, I think we want to make sure we also include language unless agreed upon by the parties. I mean, in other words, let's not draft this so that we're necessitating going to someone else, either the Commerce Commissioner or someone, to kind of be the arbiter of what's the right decision here in terms of the number. We're talking about, you know, if we're fixing a strut on a car, how many hours are we going to spend on it? And if you look at the manuals, it could be 2 hours, it could be 10 hours. I don't think we want those decisions to submit them to the Commerce Commissioner to ask if three is the right amount or if four is the right amount. I know that's not intended, but I'm reacting, Madam Chair, because I'm trying to read the words here, and I do want to circulate it to the auto insurers who are going to have to comply with this. We're not going to be able to get that to you and get a more definitive comments back. So I surely, whatever the will of the committee, we're committed to work with the legislature, with the AASP Minnesota, the Association of the Repair Facilities, in trying to work on the issues here. But I'm unclear today. I can't support the words because I haven't been able to run it by my members to get a reaction.
Senator Olson and then Senator Vandeveer will call on you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that the auto body industry has been attempting to work diligently with the insurance industry and has asked them for language that would address the concerns that they raised here the last time this was in front of the committee. And I've been informed that the insurance industry has not come forward with any language or any suggestions. So this was my attempt to address the concerns that were raised last time by the insurance industry. I guess I understand what Mr. Johnson's saying, but in the absence of a willingness to come forward with any language at all to address this issue, that's always going to be the argument. You know, so then whatever we do is something that the fact is, of course, I'm sure that they would like the way things to stay the status quo to say, because there is no, now they have the unilateral right to be making these decisions, and the body shops have no corresponding balance
right.
So I'm not surprised that there's going to be that kind of an argument coming forward with the insurance commission or from the insurance side, but this language really does address the concerns that were raised at least the last time, and I would submit that it's certainly not everything the body shops were asking for. It's an attempt to specifically get at the concerns that Mr. Johnson raised last time, and I think it strikes a fair balance.
Senator Olson, I just would say, without a showing of good cause does imply that there would be a third party making that decision as to whether or not. And how do you feel about if you struck that and said unless agreed upon by the parties? Because it would still preclude unilateral disregard or unilateral decision. Senator Olson?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how that would go then, because you said unless agreed upon by the parties, that would imply that both parties have to agree and that they couldn't. That kind of gives a little bit more favors the body shops, and I don't think they would object to that. On the other hand, if you say unless agreed upon by by a party or something, you just kind of go around in a circle then. And then you'd say, well, they can't unilaterally disregard this unless they've decided that they're going to unilaterally disregard this. And then that doesn't really accomplish anything. So what I was trying to do is find a balance. You know, we put lots of things in the law that provide standards that people follow. And anytime they don't follow those standards, you're always going to have to go to some arbiter of that to decide. But the point is that we would assume that they would follow the standard and that it would be developed just as we have in many types of insurance situations. And it would only be those rare cases where, I guess I'm open to working with the insurance industry over whether some words other than good cause, you know, would be a better way of doing this. But what I do think is that you have to find a balance between the two so that it can't just be simply unless the insurance companies, you know, that giving them all the power, but at the same time, it isn't really fair to insurance to say that the body shops can unilaterally make this decision as well. And I guess it's the will of the committee. If we go forward with this, we would not be having the version that the House has, which means we're going to have to continue to work on and work with the insurance industry to get it past the floor to something that perhaps they like better. And I would certainly be opening to do, if this is the direction that you would like to go as a committee, but you're simply worried about the good cause definition and how to balance that, I'd be very willing to work with the insurance industry to come up with something that the committee agrees to, whatever, however you'd like to proceed.
Well, in any case, Senator Olson, I think it's better than, you know, the original language in the bill. Senator Vanderveer, do you remember what you were going to ask or
say? I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The insurance company and the repair operation agree on an estimating system. Is that correct?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Vanderveer, yes, this would only apply to those situations where they have agreed to the estimating system they're going to use, where both sides have agreed to that.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, since they've already agreed to this, why would they unilaterally be able to say that they, in this particular case, or maybe Mr. Johnson would want to answer that?
Well, Senator Olson, and then I'll let Mr. Johnson speak to it, too.
Madam Chair, I think that's the whole point of that the body shops are bringing forward, is that they're saying if we've unilaterally agreed to use this system, why should the insurance company be able to just, I mean, if we've both agreed to use this, why should they just be able to unilaterally deviate? Because that's the whole problem they're having, is that that's what's occurring right now. And I'm saying I agree with you. Except the insurance company has said sometimes there is good reason for that deviation, and I'm giving them that out with this. I'm saying if they can show good cause, then they do have, even though they've both agreed to use this system, they'll still have an opportunity to get out of it if they have good cause.
Mr.
Johnson, yes, in Madam response Chair. To Senator Vandiver's question.
Madam Chair, Senator Vanderveer, I think if you look at the bill as introduced, you'll see these references to manuals. I think the question, what we at the last hearing talked about, these manuals are distributed nationwide, and they're guidelines. They're not rigid manuals that say you follow it exactly. You actually have to get in and look at what the repairs are necessary. So the manuals contemplate a give and take between the auto insurer and the repair facility to determine how many hours of what kind of project do you need. So they're not to be applied rigidly. So the bill is drafted, said they're going to be applied rigidly, and they contemplate this give and take in some discussion. So I think for us, we were reacting to the bill, but the reality is that they're trying to give a broad base of data that's utilized in the industries, you know, across the country in 50 states. And so that's what happens. I think the notion that insurers are looking at, because they're required to return the car to the pre-damage condition. So until you get in and look at what the damage is, you need to be able to make those adjustments to make the decisions on how much you're going to pay for the repair.
So Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, you're saying, well, this says that when the insurer and collision repair facility have agreed to utilize, so you're saying it's more of a guide, not a requirement, or it's not a contract that we're going to use this guide or these books. This is just a guide, and that it's normal to have a discussion about the dollar amounts or the hours or whatever is included in that manual.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes.
Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Schoonover wanted to respond, and then I'll call on Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I beg to differ. It is a requirement for our industry to use a electronic form of estimating guideline. This would eliminate the standard out in there of saying, how much to repair my car? $10,000. Well, what's included in that? This is required to give an itemized list of what is being repaired, what is being refinished, what is being replaced. That is a requirement, at least my understanding with all the insurers I deal with, that we need to use some form of electronic estimating. It is a guideline that we adhere to. However, the only concern that our industry has is that the times in those guidelines are always artificially reduced. They're never increased. They're always reduced because it's presumed that because we're efficient, because we're faster, because we can, you know, a number of reasons, it's just arbitrarily reduced for no reason. We just don't pay for that. Or, Mike, you're the only one who asked for that. Those are the types of responses we get.
So, Mr. Schoonover, are you saying that happens after you've done the work and you can show that it took 6 hours instead of two to do it?
There's operations, Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
There's operations that we are not allowed to document on the repair bill that we did perform, just simply because an insurer will not pay for it. For instance, if I may give you an example.
Yes.
If a fender on your car gets damaged, the guide says that it takes 2.5 hours to refinish a clean, undamaged, new part. Right out of the box from General Motors, Toyota, Chrysler, you name it. 2.5 hours to refinish a brand new part. However, we can repair your fender on your car. It still only lists 2.5 hours to refinish that. However, there's extra steps that are required for us to get that from where when it got damaged to the condition prior to or better than the accident. And there's instances where we are not compensated or cannot put on the repair bill of what we had to do additionally to get that vehicle back to pre-accident condition.
Mr. Schoonover, I don't know, but why wouldn't you just put on the new one? Why would you make a choice to do what takes more work and takes longer?
Well,
Mr. Schoonover.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I'm getting this down. Our job as collision repair professionals is to work with the insurance industry to try to save money on these repairs. It would be very easy to replace every single part, but it would be very expensive, and that would not be good judgment on our part. Okay? It would be a lot easier, it would be more productive, but it would be a lot more expensive. And we're sensitive to the fact that insurers have a bottom line that they would like to maintain. Okay? So we want to play ball. So if a part is repairable and it's a less expensive option than replacing that panel, we are going to do the less expensive option. We're going to try to save some money on this. However, there's extra steps required that we're not being compensated for that we would like to get compensated for. We're not asking to double the cost of repairs. That's not what we're asking. We just want to make these incremental changes in steps that we do every day that we are not allowed to charge for, that are recognized in these electronic databases.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, does your industry use the same type of automated appraisal systems or manuals when you figure an estimate?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl. Yeah, these are the systems that are used back and forth, right.
And one, Senator Madam Dahl. Chair. In describing the process, Mr. Schoonover or Mr. Johnson, would it be fair to assume that the process looks like something like you try to maybe get the highest price possible and maybe then knowing that the insurance companies are going to lowball and then you meet somewhere in the middle? Is that what happens currently?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, that is the perception out there that consumers are going to go to a repair shop and get a high estimate and then go to their insurance company and get the lower estimate. That does take place just simply because insurers are trying to save money, and in a lot of cases, many consumers don't have those repairs fixed. So there's a little cost savings there from an insurer's standpoint. If a customer is not going to have those repairs done, why pay them for everything that a shop is going to do? Once that customer does bring it to a repair facility, most insurers understand that they've maybe overlooked or missed or didn't assess all of the damage that maybe the shop was able to do so. There's where the difference is the shop is trying to give the consumer full disclosure on what is wrong with your vehicle so that we can identify the amount of time required and the amount of money required and what the cost is going to be so that it's full disclosure.
Mr. Schoonover, do you ever just call the adjuster back and say, look, we found out that the fuel pump was damaged and we didn't know that when we went in, or whatever can be tucked away under there, and you see that there's damage to something you didn't know about in the first place? Do you Do you get satisfaction when you find something like that, Mr. Schoonover?
Madam Chair, yes. That takes place, literally hundreds of times in shops every day. But the obvious damage when things are broken or damaged, that type of thing, most of the time insurers will be respectful of the shop and say, yes, go ahead and do that, or I approve these. However, when the shop wants to get extra compensation for making a part better than it was before, there's extra steps required that are not recognized. A good example is a process called Feather Edge Prime and Block. Okay?
Easy for you to say, Mr. Schoonover. What is it called?
Feather Edge Prime and Block.
Okay.
And I don't want to get too technical, but it is a process that is required to get a damaged part to a finished product. Okay? That step is recognized by the collision repair industry and some insurers. However, on record, insurers will not recognize that process, nor will shops be able to charge for that on a repair estimate, on an insurance repair estimate. That's the difference from taking that new part refinish time that you're allowed, the 2.5 hours that I was referring to. That's the difference from getting it from where it was damaged to where you can refinish that particular part. And there's numerous others. There's dozens other little instances like this that shops are not able to put on their repair bill.
Mr. Johnson.
Well, Madam Chair, I wanted to just throw two sentences on to Senator Dahl's question. There are a lot of very good relationships, business relationships between auto insurers and members of the AASP Minnesota, and really cooperate, coordinate work to get the repairs done. So this is a good state for the relationship between auto insurers and facilities. There's a number of states that are not good states, and I'm quite sincere about that. So I think it's important to state that here so that you all, if the committee, know that. And I think through the years here, we've had a good ability to identify problems and have an exchange and, frankly, try to work out something that is responsive to the concerns that have been raised. That's been the track record over the last half a dozen years for sure. So I just want to make sure that you get a fuller picture, think of how the day-to-day goes. There are clearly some issues that have come up, as Mr. Schooner described, or partial refinishing. There are some particular areas where I know there's probably some friction points, but I think those are friction points that over time they actually tend to work out some resolutions. Maybe a couple of insurers start treating it differently, and you'll see some practices, and changes evolve. So I think overall there's a lot of good business relationships that are valuable to both sides and surely to the auto insurers in Minnesota.
Madam. I'm going to try to hold my voice here. Mr. Johnson, do you think that the amendment that Senator Olson is offering is a step in the right direction? And I've heard her say she would continue to work with you on perhaps that final clause or phrase about good cause. Is it better than the bill?
Well, Madam Chair, I'll speak for myself because I haven't been able to check with my members, and I say that not to pass the buck because that's the truth. So, but I will get the input from my members, and I believe it is an improvement, and I'd be happy to take up Senator Olson and the supporters of this on that offer and to sit down. And there's time, as Senator Olson described, the House bill is the original bill, so there's some sizable differences here, obviously, and we're committed to working with the sponsors and Senator Olson and the House author and seek a resolution here. We understand the concerns expressed, and we're sincere about the commitment to try to come up with some alternatives.
So Senator Olson has moved the A2 amendment. Is there any further discussion on that? Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak to that? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Burhan. I'm an assistant vice president for Liberty Mutual Insurance. Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Can you give us your last name again? I'm sorry.
It's Burhan.
Charles Burhan?
Yes, with Liberty Mutual Insurance. Thank you very much. Senator, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just saw the amendment myself and some initial concerns. First, this bill has, as we all know, appeared in other states as well and has recently been moved both in Kansas and Missouri. It's also kind of quirky in that most times when the industry has a so-called expert system, usually you have outside parties insisting upon the ability to have human intervention. Now we have the reverse of that. You don't want human intervention, which seems very peculiar to me overall. I think Mr. Johnson's correct that we shouldn't encourage litigation as an outcome. So certainly that is a first area of concern. But looking at the amendment, there's several things which kind of come to mind. The phrase unilateral disregard does not encompass all the situations. For example, as one of the witnesses indicated earlier, there are situations where there's pre-existing damage in the vehicle. And quite often a body shop will, in an effort to help that customer, will try to accommodate that pre-existing damage, even though it's not covered by the claim in question or even the carrier on the current claim. That is something which should not happen. The carrier shouldn't have to pay for that. And there are times when those claims are commingled on the automatic estimate generated by the body shop. It would be inappropriate for the carrier to include payment for that. And therefore, that would be a situation, for example, here, where we are unilaterally disregarding. But it's not disregard, it's rejecting.
Mr. Burhan, if I may interrupt you, would the adjuster know that? I mean, wouldn't they, when they look at it, they can see that that dent over on the left side is clearly an older incident? And
well, I'm just trying to run through the actual, my understanding of how this series of events will transpire, because if you are getting an automatic estimate, then you're presupposing there is an adjuster viewing that damage, and that you have a careful enough review to flag something which is not overtly not conjoined to the claim in question. So that's one basic response.
Senator Olson, did you want to say something on that?
Madam Chair, just thinking about this objection and the concern about the good cause and that having more of a legal connotation, I'm going to make a suggestion, and I don't know exactly how it's going to be received, but it's because it's going to water this down maybe a little bit further. But I would suggest eliminating the without a showing of good cause and then saying that the insurance adjuster may not, on line 1.4, unilaterally and arbitrarily disregard a repair operation. Because now what we're saying is really basically, that's very clearly, I think, understood. They have to have a reason. Now, the reason that was just raised here is a reason. Mm-hmm. There could be potentially lots of reasons. But they can't just do it arbitrarily without any reason.
Senator Olson moves then to the A2 amendment on line 1.4 after unilaterally add and arbitrarily, and on line 1.6 strike the comma and everything through the word cause. Am I?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Did I read that right? On that, Senator Vandiver?
Chair, although I think you're kind of negotiating with yourself, Senator Olson.
Well, I think Senator Olson is trying to
The bill doesn't do what the witness says it does. It doesn't seek to get payment for prior damage. None of that's part of this. I don't see why it's relevant or why we'd be trying to adjust for that at this point.
Well, I think Senator Olson is responding also to the earlier concerns and trying to take this out of the court, if you would, you know, purview, not having it go to a third party, but...
And I will support that.
Okay. On the Olson motion to amend the A2 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign. The motion prevails, and the amendment to the A2 amendment is adopted then. So, Mr. Burhan, did you have more to...
Just a few more points, if I can. To the matter of the systems not being accurate references or accurate guidelines, I mean, these systems are accomplished by national meetings of senior repair executives from the various carriers, from the manufacturers, and from the various body shop associations. So if indeed there's a belief the manuals are not accurate, they are adjusted periodically, if not annually. These society meetings take place quarterly. So if there is a concern that the manuals do not reflect reality of the repair process, it's best done at those venues and not through these individual iterations of individual claim disputes. But the heart of the matter, what I find peculiar is that a lot of times when you're faced by an expert system and you're a claims rep or a claims manager for a carrier and you want to find an accommodation, so you will go around the system and maybe add something to the claim on the carrier's perspective to make sure you can meet some of the objections of the individual body shop. You may recognize a shop is not one of your shops, but they're doing a damn good job. So you'll then juggle the system to their advantage. And the problem having this kind of a limited view of the world, it's very unilateral. It doesn't give the discretion you're seeking from people of good intentions and people who want to accomplish what basically is a volume transaction business that doesn't lose the interest in the individual consumer in the process. That's the downside of this kind of approach. And that's why I think it's not the proper approach. And frankly, if you look at the complaint ratios, the vast number of auto repairers don't entail complaints for a reason, because people want to get things done. One consequence, adverse consequence of a bill like this, in all due respect, I do recognize the intention is very positive, is if I think my firm is locked in on a repair estimate using automatic device, I don't use it. And therefore, I encourage the use of individual claims managers, individual claims reps. The consequence of that is increased costs, and not those amorphous increased insurance costs we always hear about. But here's the practical reality. If a claims rep can't get to a car, there are storage costs involved. And who pays an additional storage cost? If they can't make the appointment time, because all due respect, the body shop people are busy, they might have a half hour to break the car out and look at the insurance rep. All those storage cost issues go back to the deductible the insured may or may not have to pay, as well as the question of the overall systems costs. And it's not the best way of getting things done. If there are concerns we have here, I think we've ventilated. There's a need to have further discussion. Other states like New York form repair committees where insurers and the industry sit down and discuss any range of issues as opposed to going through a legislative route. So I certainly feel like I've been part change agent in the amendment, but we oppose the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Burnham. Burhan, I'm sorry. I'm thinking that if I go to an auto repair place, which we do a lot with one of my children's cars, and it has nothing to do with an insurance claim, they always call me with an estimate. And I think if they give me a written estimate, for example, actually even verbal, they honor that at the end. I mean, I think there, I don't know if we have law requiring that. Mr. Stang, do we have, if you give a written estimate, don't you have to honor?
Yes, I think there's repair estimate statute.
I think we did that some years ago. So I think the auto repair place or the service station, whatever, is honor bound to meet that price that they've given me. And I think that's what they're asking of insurers. So I think Senator Olson is on to something here. I don't know if this language, I think what you just, how we just amended it improves it. If you, I know you'll still keep working with the industry. I appreciate that. Is there any further discussion? Is there anybody else in the audience? Mr. Burhan, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir?
May I say something?
Yes, you may. Come up and tell us your name and who you're representing.
Thank you. My name is Darrell Amberson. I'm the president of Layman's Garage. We've been in business since 1917. I serve with the AASP of Minnesota. I'm also quite active in the industry. I serve on several committees that interact with the information providers. I've been to their facilities. I know all the systems are constructed. The gentleman that just testified before was inaccurate in some of his testimony. There is no input from the auto industry or the insurance industry on constructing these databases. These are independent firms that primarily get information from the auto manufacturers and rely on pre-existing data to put these together. The relevant reasons to deviate from the systems that have been brought up aren't necessarily relevant. Prior unrelated damage is something that we account for daily, interact with the insurance companies a lot. We have a lot of very good insurance companies in this area. We have a lot of good relationships. Frankly, I got to be very careful when we talk about insurance companies because they don't behave the same. We have some insurers that would have very little change in their process if this were enacted because they're already pretty well paying attention to the database systems that we're using now. The issue that causes us frustration that there are some that blatantly do disregard it And frankly, we're in a market position right now that the insurers are a far stronger bargaining position than repair shops. The number of shops in our country are declining because of declining claims, high costs of deductibles, some people not fixing their cars, all sorts of reasons, high gas prices. And so we find ourselves in a relatively weak bargaining position. Many insurers are, frankly, bullying us on some of these issues and just saying, we won't pay for that. Even though it describes in the manual what's to be included and what's not, we just won't pay for it. Often we hear excuses, well, nobody else is asking for it, or that's just not the norm, or we think it should be included in something else. You should just do that automatically as part of the repair. That's the frustration. And we've argued this battle for or these issues for a long time, and frankly, the insurance industry has had ample opportunity to respond to it. And were they to do that, we wouldn't be here today. We'd rather not have to have regulation to force this kind of behavior. We're just looking for some fair business practices here. I think that's all we're asking for.
Mr. Emerson, I appreciate your testimony. Can you spell your name for us? It's Darrell.
Yes, D-A-R-R-E-L-L.
Yes.
The last name is Amberson, spelled A-M-B-E-R-S-O-N.
Okay, I had it right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else who wants to speak to the bill? I think the committee has pretty good understanding of what we're doing here. Then Senator Olson is going to move that Senate File 3508 as amended. No, she has to move the A2 amendment. Forgive me.
Yes.
Senator Olson has to move the A2 amendment as amended.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment as amended to Senate File 3508.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A2 amendment is adopted. And now...
Now, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the Senate File 3508 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. Motion prevails. And Senate File 3508 as amended is recommended to pass and referred to the floor. And Senator Olson, I heard you say that you would still work with that language, but I think the committee understands what you're trying to do here. And I want to thank all the parties who came and testified. I appreciate that. And Mr. Schoonover, you're welcome anytime. You don't have to worry about going through the chair. I thought you did better than even a lot of members do. So thank you.
And members, thank you very much.
Members, we're done.
Happy Easter.
For the deadline, I assume we, you know, I don't know that we'll have anything more to do, but if that, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.